Hello and welcome to Full Access Hoops, an OTG basketball podcast. I'm Corey Waldron and I'm back with Jay Christian. He's back from vacation, so the podcast is back to our Sunday showing. Jay, what's going on?
Corey, what's up, man? And do we have a nickname for the listeners, the accessors, the full access hoopers?
It would probably be the accessors, right? I mean, we're giving access.
There you go. So yeah, I just wanted to say hey to the accessors. Sorry, I missed you guys last week.
All 10 of you.
All 10 of you. Thank you, guys. Everyone, there's seats in the middle. Come scoot in. Get closer. Yeah, man. Good to be back. As the vacation was scheduled, I was like, this is kind of a downtime. Free agency's over, and then, of course, Russell Westbrook ends up in my city that I claim, the Houston. So I'm sure there's been some discussion about that, but not here on Full Access Hoop. So buckle up, folks.
Yeah, there's actually been quite a bit of Westbrook talk on OTG because there hasn't been, as you said, we're in the dead period. So like we're almost feasting for content. And when there's just the smallest thing, you're like, oh, well, let's pounce all over that.
It's a model that's proven successful for many franchises. So no problem there with me.
So you are a Houston Rocket guy, as you just said.
I am.
So now they go from the Chris Paul, James Harden era, the run it back is done, and they get Russell Westbrook. OKC gets Chris Paul, more draft picks. What were some of your initial thoughts from the trade? That's, a lot of people have probably already heard mine.
So a couple things, right? So the first thing I thought was, holy cow, right? I do remember being at home and I just got an NBA notification that Westbrook was traded. I think other intrepid NBA reporters kind of had their nose to the ground and had not really reported, but speculated that there was something brewing, that the Rockets were a long shot. I think we'd both heard that Miami looked like the front runner for Westbrook, but you know, you were hearing some rumblings about Houston. And I think the conventional wisdom was, well, how's that going to work? Is that even better of a move? And so then the trade happens. And then of course, you know, the world goes into a bit of a frenzy. I do remember you guys having the emergency outlet pod.
I literally had just recorded an hour-long podcast about where Westbrook could end up. Got off the podcast, got a phone call from my friend saying, yo, wow, Westbrook to Houston. I was like, yeah, it's a long shot. He's like, no, dude, it happened. I was like, wait, what the fuck? Like, how are you getting news before me?
Right. So a couple thoughts. One, I'm like, in Moray We Trust is a moniker that Dalton, our colleague at OTG, can relate to, Dalton Pence, but most Rockets fans. But it's been a weird offseason for the Rockets, and I'll get to the trade, but just in general, first,
you had them as a loser. I want to say, I'm pretty sure
I did.
As a loser on the last show we did.
I did. That's a good memory out of you. Just because they hadn't really made any moves. I didn't think the roster improved. There seemed to be some discontent from Chris Paul on sort of style of play. Not necessarily the relationship with Harden, but it seemed more of just how the style and whether or not it was a fit for him. And quite honestly, being someone in the golden years of their career, or on the back nine, I'll say, not golden years, that makes them sound ancient. But concerned about that. Then you have the award show where Maury and Paul, and they're taking selfies and, hey, no, nothing to see here, which is always a red flag that something's wrong, right? When people make those kind of posts. Then you had the random sort of tweet from the Rockets official account about, well, actually Giannis hitting this MVP if you look at Harden's numbers. And I just thought that was just comical. So not a great offseason at that point. But this move happened. I'm one of the few people that really like Westbrook's game. I mean, call me the Bizarro Jorge, I guess, in terms of Westbrook's game. I really do like it. I am curious, like most people, how it will age because it's really built on athleticism. Tim Legler, ESPN, used to always say he could understand why Westbrook and Durant had so much tension at the time, because he said, his words, he was never like Westbrook, a player that was so gifted that he could beat his man every night, right? So in other words, how do you tell a guy who can get past his opponent every night to pass the ball or do whatever? So Legler used to make the point, you know, Westbrook athletically can get past every guy. He can get past every guy in front of him, 29 other point guards. So it was always tough in that relationship. To the trade itself. I am curious. I think it can work better than people are giving it credit for. but I'm not skeptical. I'm more curious about how it falls out, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, this was, I keep going back to like dating things, but like
the Rockets. I tried to stay off it intentionally.
The Rockets relationship with Chris Paul was one of those, like, you kind of know the couple's going through a bad like stretch, but they keep posting photos. They keep acting like everything's copacetic. And then all of a sudden you look and they're now no longer on that person's Facebook page. You're like, oh yeah, you guys were like going through a little bit of a rough patch.
Right.
Right. And I think you had to do it if you're Morey with Chris Paul, because you had to have the safety net for that. If we can't move this guy, we do have to move forward with this guy. So let's not just like throw him through the mud. Right. And then you get Westbrook. And I mean, see, a lot of people at OTG are a lot lower on Westbrook. I'm actually more so with you. I'm pretty high on Westbrook. I mean, the shooting woes are definitely an issue. The fact that he has to shoot in such high volumes at such low efficiency is an issue. Right. But you look at the space and the tempo the Rockets want to play, it does fit what Russell Westbrook wants to do. It also is the first situation Russell Westbrook has been in where he's surrounded by an offense pretty much predicated around driving and dishing.
Right.
And that's exactly what he's always kind of wanted or needed in OKC. And he's never had the kind of shooters that the Houston has. So I think from the offensive standpoint, Houston got a lot better. I mean, you got a younger point guard who's athletically gifted. Yes. Four straight knee surgeries. Concerning, when does that athletic ability finally take a step back? It's got to be coming in the next, you know, 2-3 years, you would have to think. For right now, your window got a little bit longer and wider because you added Westbrook and Harden instead of having Chris Paul, who's, like you said, on the back nine of his career. So I like it from that standpoint. Defensively, questionable. You got two main guys in Harden and Westbrook who aren't great defenders. Harden definitely played harder last year. Westbrook had a lot of steals last year, but that's kind of his game, is I'm going to risk it all and get a steal here, or the point guard's going to have a wide open hoop to attack. But if you're the Rockets, you went from having a top five player in James Harden and a top 40 player in Chris Paul. I don't know. It depends on where you have Chris Paul actively right now.
Yep.
And now you have two top 15 players with Westbrook and Harden. And this is the league that we've talked about a lot in this podcast. It's predicated around star talent. And Houston got a younger, better star in the now.
Yeah, and I was going to steal your point about the roster, and I meant to get it out before you could use it, but well done by you. The point about the structure of the Rockets, the offense, and the personnel is something that could actually play to Westbrook's strengths. And like you said, which is, you know, driving kick to shooters. He's never really been surrounded by shooters in that way in Oklahoma City. So that's what I like about the trade. I also like the fact that, you know, guys like playing together. They think, you know, they want to play with their friends. So it seems like obviously Westbrook and Harden have a better relationship, probably a closer relationship than Paul and Harden. But I would also say, I mean, the only caveat I would have at that point is, I mean, Harden was cool with Dwight Howard coming. I mean, I guess they weren't boys per se, but they were, you know, he had no objections to it. He seemed to like actively recruit Chris Paul just a year ago.
He likes the thought of the hot new girlfriend.
Right. As we stay, man, we need to sit on the couch.
I'm on a roll. I don't know.
But he does. He likes the idea. Wow, gosh, there's a great line from Mad Men you just made me think of when right before Don Draper, I'm going deep to the Mad Men files for the accessors, but right before he marries Megan and starts dating Megan, his secretary, he's dating like that shrink. And he kind of breaks up with her for Megan. And she says, he tells the shrink that's doing the ad research. She tells Don Draper, you know, I hope Megan knows you only like the beginning of things. Right. And which turned out to be prophetic with Don Draper and Megan. But I think that's how
hard. I want to say, as a Madman fan, great pull.
Thank you. So I think that's how Harden is in terms of recruiting free agents. So I wonder, you know, yeah, it was great. Remember when we played together in OKC? That was fun. Went to the finals. Let's do that again. Like, it sounds, the idea sounds great, but I'm curious how it is on paper. Because I'll tell you, personality wise, on the one end of the spectrum, Westbrook is, you know, and he's kind of Mamba mentality. He's of the mold, in my opinion, of a Kobe Bryant, of a Chris Paul, of a Jimmy Butler. I think Westbrook, that kind of dude on the court. I can't really quantify it, but you know what that is, right? The guy that'll show up to practice.
No, 100%. I mean, I think about that moment when he first played Durant on the Warriors, and they weren't even in like close. I think they were down by 15, but Westbrook's like, "I'm coming, like I'm coming for you." And it was like, "Nah, you're not really coming." But like, I 100% agree. He's got that mentality of he's out there trying to murder you if you're not on his team. Like he's got that dog in him.
Agreed. And the other end of the spectrum is James Harden, which quite frankly, you can't get more new dude than James Harden, right? Like is like, and I'm going to color a whole generation with this, but skinny jeans, kind of dancing on the court, check my numbers, dating a Kardashian. Like James Harden's a different dude. Now he can play, no doubt, right? He's a former MVP, runner up another handful of years. But in terms of personality on the court, forget off the court. Which, you know, again, Harden's out there on the scene. He's a Travis Scott, Russell Westbrook's a family man with, you know, at Taylor Swift's concerts. And so, but they get along, they're friends, but on the court, they are oil and water. Like Harden, I would argue, is closer personality wise to a Dwight Howard on the court than he is a Russell Westbrook. So that'll be interesting. I'm just curious how that'll work.
I don't know if I like that. I don't know if I like James Harden, Dwight Howard comparison. I don't know. Because I don't think Howard ever worked as hard as Harden. And I get maybe what you're just talking about, the personality.
Right.
Because
So in the category of not Stone Cold killers, I think there's a handful of those in the NBA, and Russell Westbrook's in that camp. And I don't think Harden is. I think Harden's just a new school guy. I think Harden's the
Paul George's? Is he like a Paul George? Paul George had that kind of.
I think George has a little more dog in him than Harden, I would say. I don't think Harden's a laid back guy. I just think I think there's a video when they're playing at the Drew and Chris Paul's barking because Chris Paul barks at all his teammates and Harden's kind of dancing after a move, you know? And yeah. I think it just encapsulated sort of where they are, right? I'm not saying Harden didn't care or anything like that. I just mean like personality wise, it's just such a different.
He's just having fun more so. And he's
takes it seriously, right? Obviously, right? But I just feel like personality wise, it's just different, man. It's just a different vibe.
I think that's fair because I'm just thinking about if Harden's kind of like his last couple of years at Houston. I mean, they lost to the Spurs and he was at the strip club later that night. And I know he got a lot of shit for that, but at the same time, if he's a laid-back guy, it doesn't mean he doesn't want to win, but it's one of those, we went out there, we tried to win, we didn't win, I'm still happy, I'm just going to go have fun now. And like that's the mentality, whereas I feel like Kobe loses that game, Kobe in that strip club. Kobe's in the gym for another 5 hours taking jumpers.
I'll give you a great example. Last year's playoffs, not this past season, but two seasons ago, with the Utah OKC series, Rubio had like the game of his life as far as the playoffs go. And what did Westbrook say in the press conference? If you remember that, he's like, "Oh, I'm shutting that shit down next game." And I remember he came out to the detriment of his team where he was so focused. It's like he'd play basketball in junior high. He's like, "Oh, I'm locking up Rubio." And so he had Rubio to the point where his back was turned to the other nine guys on the court or other eight guys on the court, just focusing on Rubio. Guys were backdoor cutting and he locked up Rubio, air quotes, but Utah's offense was getting off. But I remember Harden or Westbrook saying, "Oh no, I'm shutting that down. I'm locking him up." Like that was his response after a loss, after Rubio had, which I mean, you know, pulled a game out of his ass and Westbrook's like, "No, I'm shutting it down forever." Right.
Yeah.
And it was like, that's not really what we're trying to do here. We're still just trying to win the series.
So. Not to mention, you could probably just not lock him down and he probably wouldn't replicate the same kind of offense.
Right. Exactly. Precisely. Rubio that was my thought into that. In that moment, I was like, well, I mean, I would see if he could do it two games in a row. Actually.
I mean, odds are in your favor, Westbrook. He's probably going to have a down game. You can take the credit if that's what you want.
But yeah, so I'm more concerned about the chemistry because I think of it, and this is not apples to apples, but to steal a line from Little Dicky song, you can still compare them, right? Even though it's not apples to apples. That's from Pillow Talk for any of you Little Dicky fans, which is a hilarious song. But anyways, you know, when LeBron and D-Wade got together, right, in Cleveland, they're like, "Oh, this is going to work. Let's have some vino on Instagram." And LeBron's like, "Hey, man, we got to get these dudes out of here. I need teammates," right? And, you know, to play with this boy and try to replicate what happened in Miami, and granted, they're older, et cetera, but it wasn't quite the same. You know, I mean,
Wade was a little bit too far gone.
Yes, I think. And which is weird because I felt like LeBron kind of felt that after the 2014 finals. Like we did that whole load management.
Right. Yeah. It was a big reason why he was leaving. It's because he looked around and he was like, "Well, Chris Bosh is still pretty good, but Wade's definitely not the top two guy on this team anymore." No, I agree with that point. 100%.
You know what? Well, sorry. I mean, LeBron was probably always going back, but it would, now that you say that, it would have been interesting to see. First of all, if Miami wins that series against San Antonio, I think LeBron stays.
Yeah. I know we haven't seen it, but if you win a title, you generally don't leave. LeBron wouldn't have left if they won that title. I know Durant may have been a different, circumstance this past year if they had won.
Right.
But I think LeBron, without a doubt, if they win that, he would have just done another 1-year deal. I mean, he would have stayed until they lost.
And I think given that, it would have been interesting since they lost. I wonder, looking back in time, had Pat Riley been savage and said, okay, let's move D Wade. Let's move Wade County from the Miami Heat.
Yeah.
Would have been the most savage move of all time. But like I say, Bosch, and this is before we knew Bosch had health problems, but Bosch is playing great. He was peak. LeBron is still at the top of his game. And like Riley said at the time, you don't run and hide. You sort of re-up and you come back. That would have been interesting to see if he moved Wade for
a question. This just spawned something that I heard from ESPN, the wonderful people at ESPN who love to make some fantastic takes on all of their platforms.
as long as it's not politics.
But. Ryan, yeah. Chad Dan Levitard, you're a real one. Ryan Hollins said that Miami wasn't a big three, that it was Wade and LeBron with half of a third star in Chris Bosh.
So, serious question. Like, is Ryan Hollins just there to get roasted? He's kind of like the Washington Generals. Like, I don't know if he's really saying, I don't understand what he's saying.
We lost Paul Pierce content and we got Ryan Hollins.
Because he's taking Max Kellerman L's, which is like, I used to listen to, being on the West Coast, I used to listen to Max and Marcellus in LA all the time. I thought Max was great on the radio. He's horrible on First Take. I think he just gets blasted every day.
I think it's almost like they want him to be that bad. They want him just to say dumb shit because Stephen A. hasn't been there this week, so it's been Hollins and Kellerman. And like now Max looks like a genius. Like Max looks, and obviously you pair him up with Hollins. I guess that happens, but.
Because Hollins keeps getting dunked on. So that was very definitely a big three. Like, I mean, that's the modern, I mean, what, because people like to credit the Boston big three, but that was trades and moves. And, I see that one, but I don't really count the Celtics big three. Like I count the iteration of basketball as we know it today. I count Miami tanking and clearing up all this cap space. I count the decision. I count Boss signing. I count that move as the move where players started taking less money, started teaming up, started using the Olympic training camp as recruiting pitches. When players sort of took the power and this modern NBA of teaming up, I credit that back to the Miami Heat. And that starts with Bosch, LeBron, and Wade.
I mean, you can make the case that the Celtics big three was the last ownership created big three. And then every three since has been player created. And
100%.
It's players, like you said, just kind of wanting to play with their boys. And Miami was definitely the first installment of that. And I just wanted to make sure we were on the same page that was a big three.
I think only Ryan Hollins.
I mean, it's not a big three. I think that's also just a stupid outlier that people are like, oh, well, look at his numbers. He clearly was not the third best player, whatever the case may be. It's like, all right.
Right. No, and it's funny because, this is a whole nother topic for another day, but you think about how Bosch evolved and so he became central in your big threes. You need a Chris Bosch and not just a third guy who's probably a second or first guy on another team, but what Bosch brought defensively, what Bosch was, in terms of knocking down shots. I would argue that, the quest has sort of began for that role. Like you think about a Kevin Love, right? Cleveland wasn't probably quite as successful as they could have been because, I think at the time people thought, oh, well, he'll be the third like Chris Bosh. But I think, in my opinion, we were able to find out that Kevin Love's not quite as good as Chris Bosh was. Or alternatively, if you want to say it nicer, Chris Bosh is better than we thought, right? Because you need a defensive anchor. Like Chris Bosh made that Miami defense go, but his ability to stretch out, to hit threes. And then you look at Golden State, it was working with Draymond kind of filling that role. I mean, he got hooked up on steroids when Durant came, and then suddenly Klay Thompson becomes the third banana or whatever. But it's funny because Chris Bosh, within the big three time continuum, he creates this role of a guy that every big three, you need your Chris Bosh. Yes, you need your LeBron. Obviously, you need your D Wade, but you need your Bosh, or it's not going to work, right? So,
yeah. I mean, I think you could make the argument that he's like I think he's even said this. He was the first, like, He was the first stretch four before we had stretch fours.
I agree with that.
Like, yeah. he was one of the first big men I can recall going out behind the three-point line more and more. I mean, I'm looking at stats right now. His last two – so his first – what was that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 – I can't believe I'm counting this out loud. 10. His first 10 years in the league, he didn't shoot more than 1 3 a game. Last three, he went up and up. He shot 2.8, then 3.8, and his last year before the injury – or not the, or the disease – 4.2 threes per game. Clearly the evolution. And like you said, underrated rebounder, decent rim protector. Chris Bosh was better than Kevin Love. I think I agree with that point wholeheartedly. I think Chris Bosh, arguably maybe one of like the top 10 most underrated players in the league because of just like who he played with. He gets forgotten about in a lot of ways, especially because of the injuries and how his career kind of, I mean, it ended really abruptly.
Right.
But this was a top flight guy in Toronto and an underrated guy in Miami.
Yep. 100%.
So back to where we a little bit tangent off to the rock, back to the Rockets. A couple of final things I want to say are on the Westbrook Harden pairing. Are we concerned that these are the top two usage guys in the league, 1 and 2?
Well, that's the biggest concern, I'd say, more so than chemistry or anything else, is just by the numbers. I don't know, right? Because on the one hand, I'm encouraged, because part of me thinks, you know, Westbrook looked around in Oklahoma City and said, yeah, we're probably not going anywhere. And I don't want to, you know, spend the last few years of my prime banging my head against the wall. So he makes a deal with Presti to go somewhere else. And I don't think he does that if he's just concerned about numbers and usage rates, because otherwise he could just stay in OKC and just, you know, stay there and sort of be canonized as a hero, like the greatest Oklahoma City athlete ever. But he agrees to the move to Houston. And part of me thinks, well, we're going to see an evolution in Russ's game to sort of facilitate this being Harden's show. I would think if those two usage rate cases come out ahead, I think it would be Westbrook's that willingly takes a bit of a adjustment and deferment to Harden and his team and his status as the alpha on the Rockets. But then again, there's nothing in Russell Westbrook's past that makes me think he takes a backseat to anybody, right, friend or not, new team or not. So if anything, his user rate might go up, you know, with him being on the team. So it's a concern of mine. I think the optimist in me says Westbrook doesn't maneuver and get to a place like Houston without, because again, if he wanted to be out, he could, again, could probably just try to angle to go to the Knicks, right, where he can be the star and get triple doubles, et cetera, et cetera. But to me, the conscious move to go to Houston, I think the usage rate is a concern, but I have to think that Westbrook's game adjusts in some way, shape, form, or fashion to facilitate he and Harden being on the court at the same time.
See,
or to Connor Kidd.
I don't think Westbrook changes his game.
Okay.
I think if anything changes, I think it's Harden. Right. I think Harden goes maybe into a little bit more off ball. I'm in isolation. Like, it's almost going to be Westbrook and Durant 2.0, but yeah, it's Westbrook and Harden now.
Right.
Kind of like you go, then I go. We can both run the point, which is a little bit different. I think Westbrook needs the ball in his hands more than Harden to be successful offensively. Like, you need the guy who can push the pedal to the floor and everything else. And it might even give Harden a break so he doesn't have to dribble so often, that he can kind of, you know, play off on the wing, catch the ball from Westbrook, go to work a little bit, or vice versa. I just don't, like you said, we don't really have much evidence of Westbrook taking a back seat, of him letting his foot off the gas.
Right.
And, you know, I saw this on Twitter because I talked about this. Somebody was like, well, Westbrook's not the best player, so he shouldn't have the highest usage rate. And I mean, granted, that's a fair argument, I guess, but usage rate doesn't, I mean, you don't have to be the best player and have the highest usage rate.
Nope,
I don't think that's a ridiculous take. And I think for this
oversimplification, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair. That's actually a better way to put it. I just think for this situation in particular, you don't want Westbrook to kind of get out of his rhythm where maybe he's playing more off ball. Because Westbrook off ball is not good.
I agree with that. Yeah, that is fair.
Because him sitting in a corner where he shoots 29% from three isn't ideal.
Not a good, right.
And you just want him to be as active as possible. So I think there is a concern, obviously, with the usage rate, but I think it's more so how Harden's going to adjust to Westbrook, because I don't think Westbrook's game is going to change all that much. Maybe the most change we could get out of his game is maybe he doesn't take 20-plus shots a game, but that doesn't seem likely.
But you raise a point, and I actually have not looked at it this way, but there's an argument for D'Antoni, and there's an argument to be made to go to Harden and say, this is how we're going to prolong you for the season. This is how we're going to have you fresher for the playoffs, and maybe even extend your career. I mean, Harden doesn't rely so much on the athleticism as a Westbrook or, you know, an Iverson did back in the day. But having you talk it through, that actually makes sense. If you say, okay, well, maybe Harden's the guy who, I don't know how to say this. Maybe he's not, and not to insinuate that he was doing this the previous seasons, but Harden's not sort of chasing, air quotes, another MVP or anything like that. He's just trying to be the most complete player he can be and be ready for a deep playoff run. So maybe Westbrook being Westbrook and having shooters to kick to, maybe that improves his efficiencies as a player. But on the counterbalance of that, Harden's usage rate going down maybe saves him in the fourth quarter, saves him in the last leg of the season, has him fresher to compete in the playoffs. So maybe that's an added advantage of Russell Westbrook just being Russell Westbrook, and Harden adjusting his game in the sense where not that he's going, I'll stand like he was doing with Paul a little bit. I'll stand in the corner while you go, I go, right? Which, as effective as it was for the Thunder when it was Durant and Westbrook, still had a ceiling nonetheless, right? I mean, yeah. It ultimately didn't work. I think if Harden can adjust his game in the sense where, okay, he's off the ball, but he's still active and engaged in the offense, I like that. That's more positive than trying to assume Russell Westbrook after year 10 is going to change his game or whatever. So, I could actually – I'm more optimistic about that now that you've sort of talked it out. That actually makes sense.
Yeah, because I'm looking at the usage rate of Harden the last 2 years. So it was 36% in the first year of Chris Paul, and last year it was 40%.
Okay.
There's just no way – you win with a 40% usage guy on your team. That's just so much load on one guy's shoulders. And we saw it in the playoffs. I mean, he didn't look great in the playoffs once again. I mean, he had a couple nice games, but I mean, against Utah, they did play that weird janky ass defense where they were just giving him the lane and making him do floaters with his offhand, which was a good drill, I suppose. There's got to be some break. And I think you're right. This could help save Harden long term because, arguably when Westbrook gets 2 years older, he's going to be a lot more problematic than Harden when he gets 2 years older. And maybe in 2 years, you look at reworking how you fix the lineups, and then maybe Harden goes back to being the high usage guy. I think it'd be smarter just to have Harden kind of just take his foot off the gas slightly when it comes to just dribbling around for 20 seconds.
I was going to say, do you think D'Antoni could, is the genie out of the bottle? Could D'Antoni go more back to more of a Phoenix 7 seconds or less style? Like,
I think that would be ideal. If I'm being honest with you, you don't have to finish that sentence. I think the seven going as fast as possible and trying to get this team up tempo, I think works in their favor. It's probably the best situation for this offense, especially with Capella being one of the more, I don't want to say mobile bigs, but he's got long strides. He can kind of keep up. And him actually too, not to get a little bit off tangent, he's going to have a tremendous year for the fact that now he has James Harden and Westbrook. And we know Westbrook gets centers involved.
Right. Yeah, I think that's right. And it's funny, the sidebar, we can talk about this later some more, but I was talking to my brother-in-law over my vacation, and we got Michael Jordan's Come Fly With Me came on NBA TV. And my brother-in-law is obsessed with like specs of today's players. They're just bigger, stronger, faster. And he contends that if Michael Jordan was a player today, if we just dropped like 1991 Michael Jordan into the NBA, that he would be probably the 30th best player in the NBA.
Oh, that's egregious.
So needless to say, it was a very interesting debate that we had over the course of an hour. So this would make me think of it because I said, okay, let's do it this way. I said, because essentially he was saying there's like one to two players on every team in the NBA that are better than Michael Jordan. And so I said, okay, never mind the fact that if you told me today, if everyone in the NBA died today, if you said, who are the all-time greats, like everyone died today, I would say three. I would say Durant, LeBron, Steph are the guys that are great. Now, the other guys can get there, but if the NBA ended today, who are the all-time greats in the league today? I'd say there are only three of those. Never mind that. My brother-in-law insists that every team has at least one, maybe two guys better than Jordan. So we started on the Atlantic Division. I got to the Brooklyn Nets, and he conceded that Kyrie was not better. Durant, I was like, I don't see it, but I at least will not yell at the TV over that.
Durant, possibility still.
Possibility.
When it's all said and done. I mean, obviously the Achilles thing now is a giant question mark. But
that's okay. I'm like, okay, that one I will at least listen to. I mean, I disagree, but whatever. Then he said Caris LeVert, and I about threw the remote at him. I said, Jesus Christ, like that.
he said LeVert was better than Jordan.
Yes, today.
But not right Kyrie.
Yes. Yes.
These numbers don't add up.
I mean, I don't know. weed is not legal in Idaho. I don't know if he brought something, but
that's definitely not true.
Yeah, we as friends I was about to say, as friends with people on the creators of the Brooklyn Buzz, Jack and Nick wouldn't even agree with that statement. So, but anyway, sorry, we got on this tangent with rim runners and all of this. So I thought about, because we were talking about modern players and you know what they could do if, like, we drop Capella into the 70s. It's like, well, yeah, he'd be a stud, but I said you have to always factor, like, if you give Jordan like $1 million, you know, hyperbaric chamber and nutrition and cross training, what would he look like today? And you can't hand check him, by the way.
No, Jordan is putting up a mixture of. His scoring output would have to be almost better than Harden this past year at 36 points. Like, I would imagine.
Oh, Jordan, if you had to guard Jordan like you guarded Steph, or it's a foul if you touch him and you can't, you get him. He's without breaking a sweat.
Yeah.
Breaking a sweat. Like, because the Pistons just tackle Michael Jordan, like physically tackle. Same thing with Shaq. Like, if you couldn't just hang on Shaq, like they used to, you know, and not get suspended 40 games, like Shaq would average 50. But
and obviously, going to date myself, I don't have a ton of knowledge watching Jordan, but just watching highlights too. I mean, the guy was an underrated passer too.
Yes.
So you start throwing double teams at him when he's dropping 40. It's not like he couldn't get other guys involved. And the fact of the matter is, he's a really good defender too. I mean,
Jordan, all world defender. Yeah, for sure.
Oh my God. In today's league, he is feasting. And we're probably not even talking about LeBron Jordan debate, if I'm being honest.
No, yeah. It was a ridiculous. I'm sorry, we just got on this tangent, but but yeah, so we're going on the offense, and I think updating it to maybe getting back to the ball moving a little more and less of Harden, because I think that's what D'Antoni was kind of going for when he first got to Houston, and then added that, and maybe that's because of personnel at the time before the Rockets really built the roster the last couple of years to have a better supporting cast that. You know, it sort of evolved to Harden kind of doing his thing for 20 seconds and a step back three or getting a foul. And as a fan, I want the Rockets to win, but I can admit that that's not the most aesthetic thing to watch. Even as a Rockets fan, I will say that kind of drives me nuts where Harden just waits there and gets you tangled up for a foul. I mean, I won't say it's Bush because the refs call it, but I mean, it's kind of cheap, I think.
It's not fun basketball.
It's not.
I mean, I'll be one of the first people to say it. I don't enjoy watching James Harden play most nights. I really don't. I mean, there are nights where he's extremely fun and he gets going. But there's two main nights where I watch. I mean, in the playoffs in particular, I don't like watching him in the playoffs.
Right.
It's too much dribbling and a lot of forced threes. It's just not. And I think, oh my God, I'm looking at their pace. I was curious. Last year, the Rockets were 26th in pace. Oof.
Did you ever think that doesn't fit D'Antoni's team?
Like the offense we know for D'Antoni to generally run that doesn't even fit his kind of system.
While you're getting a wild hair with the Google machine, I'm curious what D'Antoni's pace would play. Obviously, I'd be curious with the Phoenix Suns in heyday 7 seconds or less. I'm assuming top two. Right.
Let's see. So I'm guessing that was the 06-07 season. They won 61 games. Does that sound right?
That's probably right.
Their pace was third in the NBA.
Oh, okay.
There you now, go. Granted, the Rockets' pace last season was 96.1. The Suns' pace that year was 95.6. Paces have changed, clearly. But yeah, the Phoenix Suns team, just looking at these couple years where they were extremely good and they had 62 right. wins in 2004-2008, it looks like they were the best team in 2004-2005 in pace. So yeah, they were the top five teams in pace. And now the Rockets were 26 last year, and I'm going to peak the year before. And they were 13th the year before. So they've been kind of middle of the pack.
I think I think the Rockets can get away without totally, I think, annihilating or neutralizing Harden's skill set. I think somewhere in top 10 to 15 is probably where the Rockets want to be. You know what I mean? I think that pace, I don't think they should be in the 20s by any means to be effective, but they're probably not to maximize James Harden's skill set. I think anything more than probably top 10's pushing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'll give you a fun fact too, actually. D'Antoni's first year in Houston, however, with Howard and everything else, they had a pace of 100, and it was the third best pace in D'Antoni's first year in Houston.
Interesting.
So they've gotten worse, but that's also because I think James Harden's usage rate has gone up and up since that initial takeover.
So here you go. To me, that says your star player, you probably have to have a talk with him this summer and a bit of a come to Jesus and say, look, for us to get the best out of this roster, we need to get back to this. Right. And Harden, I think, was still playing at an MVP level with those Dwight Howard teams. And, you know, he's starting to build the case for being MVP. So it's not like, you know, the talent's always been there, but, you know, to your point a few minutes ago, maybe it's Harden that has to do the changing for this team to be effective. And the question then becomes, how receptive is this Gen Z-er to the coach coming in and saying, hey, star player that we've extended to a $200 million contract, we need you to tinker a little bit this summer, because this is what I'm thinking going into next season.
Yeah, no, I think that's – there's got to be some sort of talk about just kind of reworking the offensive scheme, I think. I mean, you got two egoed guys now. You got two guys who really need the ball in their hands. So it's going to be interesting to see how that works out. Now, we haven't talked about it at all, which is typical for us. There's also another
OJ team. Update. Oh, no, sorry. I thought there was an OJ. I thought it was a...
Okay. I haven't checked the OJ moments recently, but the OKC Thunder. We kind of neglected this side of things.
Oh, yeah. As is everyone not in Oklahoma, but
right. So now OKC's got about 47 draft picks.
Yep.
Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, Steven Adams still, Dennis Schroeder, and you have Chris Paul, Gallinari. So now if you're the Thunder, they're trying to move Chris Paul. I've heard rumors about Miami possibly. I've heard rumors about Detroit. I've heard rumors about I heard a Milwaukee rumor yesterday, but I don't think it's true. I don't see how it would be true or why it would be true or why they would do that. Right. But yeah, so now OKC's got Chris Paul, and if you keep the team intact, you're probably somewhere between the 8 seed and 11 seed in the West. I wouldn't say they're not a playoff team. I wouldn't have them as my playoff team. But man, it's been a weird couple of years for OKC. You went from Harden, Durant, Westbrook, Ibaka to Durant, Westbrook to Westbrook, Ibaka to Westbrook, Oladipo, Westbrook, Paul George, and now here we are with Chris Paul.
Yeah. So you don't think Milwaukee will do the trade, or you don't think it's?
I don't think it makes sense for Milwaukee to get Chris Paul.
Why not?
Okay. Good question.
Counterpoint. Why?
Okay. So I know Bledsoe is like a really polarizing player because in the regular season last year, he was like the angel. We loved him. Career year, got a decent contract at the time, 4 years, $70 million, which felt like a steal for Bledsoe. Really good defender. Actually, probably an underrated defender. especially on the perimeter guy, just a handful. Really didn't get enough credit for the work he did on Kyrie Irving in that second round series, because he really did annoy the shit out of Kyrie. And also that could just be the fact that he had some bad blood against the Celtics for the year prior, but nonetheless, he played really good that series defensively. Chris Paul, good playmaker, that kind of offensive system with all those shooters, probably the ideal situation for Chris Paul. They don't really have a solid pick and roll guy unless you put Giannis in the pick and roll, which you probably should do anyways if you're Milwaukee, because the guy's 6'11", and just ridiculous length. So I guess an offensive standpoint, the Bucks probably do get better with Chris Paul, but they're worse defensively. And do you really want to lock up $40 million in Chris Paul and have him in the next 2 years when he's getting older and not as quick? Because I think Milwaukee likes to run. And can we really trust Chris Paul to run up and down the court for, you know, 60 plus games for 30 plus minutes? I just don't know.
Okay. So on the court, it makes sense to me. I think the Bucks are in need of a sort of alpha floor general to sort of bring Giannis to that next level. I think Chris Paul can still play. I think he's still a great player. I think he's a good player. He's probably not a great now, but I think he's still, when you start naming starting point guards, I mean, the list is not exhaustive, I think, of guys that you'd take ahead of Chris Paul today. I think he fits with Milwaukee has, as you mentioned, the shooters and having a guy like Giannis as a teammate. From a front office standpoint, one thing that the era of the super teams and the big threes and trying to retain stars to, you know, quote unquote mid-market locales has taught me is, and this is a line from Brian Windhorst, essentially when he's talking about LeBron in Cleveland and how maddening it is to be in the ecosystem of LeBron and his passive aggressiveness and et cetera, et cetera. And at the time, Windhorst said, essentially, you put up with it if you have to, because as soon as LeBron leaves Cleveland, you're not getting another one of those, probably for the history of the franchise, right? And I feel that way about Milwaukee. I think sometimes mid-market teams try to get too cute in terms of, well, we don't pay this luxury tax, we don't want to, you know, overextend here, we don't want to pay the freight for this guy or overpay for et cetera, for a myriad of reasons, right? And then it gets time to sign the Supermax, and Giannis representation walks into the front office and says, oh, by the way, Giannis is not signing, so you probably need to trade him. I think what I've learned in this era, what I would do, and probably to my detriment and be fired if I was a front office guy, is you pay those taxes, you do what you have to do to keep those superstars happy. If they walk, they walk, and that's where you're going to be anyway. If Giannis blesses a Chris Paul move, if Chris Paul is someone they can get, and, you know, what if we have to pay Chris Paul $40 million when he's 34? Then you do it. Or, you know, he's an expiring contract and, you know, he's trade bait, or you can, you know, offload him at some other point. But where I think a lot of mid-market teams are failing is that they're not they're giving their superstars an out. They're giving the Giannis's, the LeBrons, the Anthony Davis's of the world an out to say, well, look what this franchise did, which is, you know, nothing. I mean, Anthony Davis, as awkward as that situation was last year, Anthony Davis had a point. He was there for, what, 8 years or what was it? And the Pelicans were more concerned about running the Saints, which is fine because Louisiana is a football state, New Orleans is a football town, but they're more concerned with the Saints than the Pelicans. And so he had every right to leave, right? As clunky as it was, no one was begrudging Anthony Davis for wanting to leave. So if Milwaukee can get Chris Paul, I think it makes them a contender immediately. I liken it kind of to the Jason Kidd trade to Dallas a few years ago in 2011. I remember during All-Star break that year, I was like, man, that's weird. That's kind of an odd trade. But it ended up getting them a championship. So I think if, however far-fetched it is, if Chris Paul can end up in Milwaukee, I say you do it, because I think the West is even more wide open. You got a year without Durant. Toronto's weaker. Who knows what the hell's going to happen in Philly. I think if they can get Chris Paul, I actually like that trade a lot. So, and scene.
I mean, it does. I feel like what I'm about to say is like just completely contradicting everything I just said. Cause I do think if you get Chris Paul, you have a better chance of winning the chip this year Yep. But I still think long-term Bledsoe just makes more sense.
Oh,
but God. I do agree that in the right now, Chris Paul makes them better.
Yes, I agree with that too.
And then again, and then you make a good point. I mean, the Antetokounmpo free agency is not close, but it's also not far.
Right.
Like, I mean, you have to take into account that in 2021, this guy is going to be on the market. And he has already said that he would love to stay here and play here, which is what every guy's got to say. I mean, right. Some of these questions that the guys get asked, like, how do you think about your chances this year? Oh, I think we're going to win a chip. Like, what do you think he's going to say? No, not our year. We're not good enough yet. Right. Try next year, though. Well, not this year, though. Like, some of the questions are like, come on, man. So, of course, he goes with, you know, the PR answer. He wants to be there long term as long as winning is the priority and as long as they are winning.
Right.
Well, getting a guy like Chris Paul does signify you're trying to win now. And maybe that's a move they take in regards to just showing Antetokounmpo that they're not interested in being very good and coming up short.
Right.
That they'll do what they have to try and bring a winning team around him. Right. And also, I think, and I don't know his relationship with Brogdon to a degree, but I know that he wasn't thrilled that he lost Brogdon.
Right.
Of course, they weren't going to bring Brogdon back for 4 years, $85
million. Right.
Pacers went a little bit high for a reason. But yeah, I don't hate the thought of Chris Paul in Milwaukee. I just don't think when we're in that last year that it's going to look good. And that last year would also be it would be Antetokounmpo's last year, which actually isn't terrible because then you would hit his money off the books, you re-sign Antetokounmpo, and then you could put Chris Paul's money elsewhere. So I guess that's not a terrible timeline of contract matchup.
Right. Right. I mean, I just think it's and then so we haven't entertained this part of the trade though. I mean, if I'm Sam Presti, who I mean, I think I tweeted or I put in the chat for the outlet the other day when you guys had the pod when you're live when the news of trade broke. It's like Presti's, you know, competing with I think with Jerry West and Kawhi Leonard for executive of the year so far. And my man David Griffin. Presti could walk in and tell Chris, look, you know, we got some pieces here. We have a ton of draft picks. We have expirings. And if you can just convince Chris Paul, hey, get to make it to training camp, give me to the trade deadline. And let me see if I can move some things around. If we can just kind of, like you saying, 8 through 11, if we can hover, and then we can start offloading draft picks, we can start offloading expirings to get some help around and make that push in the second half. I mean, I think that's tenable because they don't – I mean, it's Steven Adams, Gallinari, the kid
– Gilgeous-Alexander.
Gilgeous-Alexander. You know, those aren't bad pieces. And I think you said you had them between 8 and 11 – I mean, let's
playoff
run through
it. Playoff team in the East, they're probably 6-8. They're in the East.
Right. So maybe that's Presti's pitch is like, just give me to the All-Star break. Let me see if we can hover. And then I can work the phones. I can make some moves, between December and February and see if we can't sort of retool on the fly, essentially give me 40 games and then I'll see what I can do with this roster.
I don't think that's a terrible route to take because I mean, as of right now, there's just not a giant market for Chris Paul. And also at the deadline, there might be two or three more teams who are like, well, shit, we just need a really good point guard. We'll take the risk for Chris Paul.
Right. Cause you have, let's see, you got three California teams. I'm just saying the playoff teams in the West. They say Golden State, the two LA teams, Denver, Utah, Houston. Who am I missing? Portland. That's seven.
And then the eighth seed, it could be Sacramento this year. It could be San Antonio. It could be OKC. If you're really high on Minnesota, I guess you could put Minnesota in the mix. How does Dallas look with Doncic and Porzingis?
Yeah, I forgot about Dallas. New Orleans could be fun. Yeah, so there is, but there's still, but that I mean, we named, I think, seven bona fides and then eight sort of jostling around. I think that's fair. Like, none of those teams, of the teams you just named, I'd probably just pencil San Antonio in just because right. San Antonio
of experience and pop. Yeah.
Right. But you can make a case for every team we just named. So maybe that's, you know, you're kind of hovering there. And although, you know, you were a game away from the finals 2 years ago, I mean, maybe that's a hard sell for a guy like Chris Paul, But maybe Presti goes in and says, yeah, just give me 40 games and I'll see what I can do. And if it doesn't work, then we'll try to get you wherever you want to go. But let me see if I can retool this on the fly.
So I was daydreaming when I woke up. Nice. This is a weird way to start. So I was laying in bed, woke up. I had a fun night last night, you know, and there you go. You know, I was laying there and my thoughts are about the pod and what we're going to talk about. And then I started thinking about this Chris Paul segment. And I was thinking about Miami and Chris Paul.
Yes.
And my mind immediately went to, well, you know, they can trade for Chris Paul and then you get Chris Paul, Jimmy Butler. Why would you do that per se? Cause that's like a 2-year window and your window is clearly a useless window cause you can't really win anything. But, I had just the fun thought of let's get Chris Paul to Miami. Let's sign Carmelo Anthony. I think Wade would come out of retirement for 1 year and let's just have some fun in South Beach.
I was with you till you said Wade came out of retirement. Then it's like, then Air Bud signed for 10 day. And then I realized you were probably dreaming when you thought of all this, but,
I think I'm not even kidding you. I seriously think there is a scenario in which Dwayne Wade comes out of retirement.
Interesting.
I do think there's a scenario. I think that him and Jimmy Butler are best friends. I think if you get enough of his friends in Miami, Wade goes, yo, I kind of want to play one more year. Like, I know I said I was done, but I also told you guys, I think I had 2-3 more years left. Well, I'm going to use one of those 3 years left right now.
Oh, man. I don't see it. You know, this sounds like, and I have more rings on the tree than you do. So when I go play basketball, that's what it sounds like when I like call my friends, I'm like, hey man, they're playing at so-and-so. Do you want to go hoop? And then I got to get like another 30-year-old to come out and we go play with the young guys. Like, this is what it sounds like right now. It's like, we call like somebody gets a wild hair. Like we watch the Dream Team documentary and we're like, yeah, man, let's go run the court. And then I call my buddies and they're like, oh, I don't know. And so I got to convince them to go to the rec center and play and then watch our washed asses get run by 18 and 19 year olds. But, that's what I'm thinking of when you're like, hey, they'll just call Chris Paul and he'll come out.
It's almost like you first get there and you're with your boys, you see somebody else playing, they're like, yo, you want to run full? And you're like, yeah, sure, we'll play full. And then halfway in, your team's just not getting back. You're like, God, shit, should have played half.
We're playing zone. It's like we got zone. We're calling over and back. It's all, yeah, no, yeah. That's what I pictured with Wade coming back out of retirement. But I mean, crazier things have happened. I mean, you know, Jordan was an executive and he came out of retirement and ruined Kwame Brown's life in the process. But I could see the Melo thing. I was with you till you got to Wade suiting up. I mean, I don't know, man. When you don't have to get ready and you're just kind of relaxing.
The Wade part is definitely the
that's the kicker. That's a sweetener, right?
Yeah,
that's
that was the cherry. Like, I just made a sundae and I was like, what is this missing? I was like, oh, it's Sunday. the cherry.
And, I will say this. Paul and Butler make more sense than people give credit. Because I feel like, again, they're in that same sort of camp, a little old school, I guess, if you want to simplify the mentality I'm trying to describe. But And I think Riley.
Those are two guys who just want to win. I mean,
just want to win. And I think they respond to a Pat Riley type of guy, right? Like Butler was daring, Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins to challenge him. So he's like, okay, if this is your team, take it from me. Gladly do it, please. And they never did and responded to that challenge. And instead management, you know, shipped him away. But, you know, I think they would respond to a guy like Riley and the culture that Miami has, which is still very well respected around the NBA, just what the infrastructure is like with the Miami Heat organization. So, you know, what does that translate to in terms of wins on the court? I think Paul and Butler, I think they're in the mix. I don't know if I would have them probably higher than in the East.
I would have them like a 6 seed. I mean, I think
4 or 5, actually.
You have them 4 or 5?
Okay.
Well, let's lock off like the for sure top 3 teams in the East, which I think is Milwaukee.
Yep. Philadelphia.
Philly. Is that
now? Then it gets tricky. Is it Boston or Toronto or Brooklyn?
I don't think Toronto. I think Toronto takes a drop. I think it
might be Kimba and the Celtics.
I mean. All right, so let's just go from three to six. So I think 3 to 6 is Pacers, Celtics.
I forgot Nets, about the Pacers. Sorry, that was mad disrespectful. Yep.
Nets, Heat. Well, the Pacers are okay because you really got to be okay with the team without Victor Oladipo to start the year and having all these new
pieces. Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's
so
yeah.
There is a scenario where the Pacers get off to a really slow start. They're going to start Sabonis for the first time with Turner. So how does that look? And you also just don't have your best player till they're guessing right now, end of December, early January for Oladipo to come back. So who knows what they look like? They could be a seven seed in the East come that time if they get off the out of the gate slow.
Right. Good point.
Yeah, so I think it's Celtics, Pacers, Nets. That would be my 3 through 5. And I think after that, it would be a clump of Miami, Orlando, Detroit. Atlanta maybe can sneak in. But, like, I think Miami's, like, right in the middle. I could see them being a 5 seed. I could also see them being, like, a 7 seed. But I think they're, like, right in that little range.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I think Chris Paul, though, elevates it. They could be a home court team, I think, with Chris Paul.
Yeah, I would put Miami at the very least. I'd put him behind Philly, Boston, Milwaukee, Toronto, Indiana, even with Oladipo missing the first half of the season, and Brooklyn. So yeah,
if Miami's trading for Chris Paul, they're probably getting someone else from OKC in that deal along with Chris Paul, right? Like
I would assume so. Yeah.
Like you're probably going to bring Gallinari with Chris Paul or Adams, or maybe you don't get Adams, but like, I don't know. It depends on what the Chris Paul value is. I mean, they just had to give draft picks to the OKC to get rid of Chris Paul. I don't know. I guess it depends on what the value on what you value Chris Paul as. Cause I think if there's a way for Miami to get Chris Paul where you're just giving off contracts, you're not giving up, you know, like Bam, Abadayo, then you don't need a Steven Adams. Whereas maybe if you do move those guys in the deal, you bring back Adams and Chris Paul with Jimmy Butler. That's a decent big three in the East.
Right. Right. That's a good point.
Yeah. So who won the trade? I guess we'll just finish it on this front.
Won the trade? Sam Presti.
We went through this trade for an hour. with some tangents in between.
Some broken roads. Sam Presti won it. No. I will say the winners, right? So they do this every time after like an election debate, like who won, who lost. I think Presti won because I think he's clearly at a run where we're in rebuild mode in Oklahoma City. I don't think any season's ever a wash in professional sports, but I don't think he sees a roster right now. I think he sees assets, and I think he would love nothing more than try to flip Chris Paul for something, as we were just talking about. I think he's still in rebuild mode and whatever the sort of public face is. I think behind the scenes he's like, okay, what can I get for Gallinari? He's expiring. What can we get for Steven Adams? And I think they'll go full, not tank, but just full rebuild. So I think he won because to get good, he has a stockpile of draft picks. And I think OKC, that's sort of how that dynasty came together in the early iterations. So I think the fan base will be patient with young talent and trying to find the next iteration of Westbrook and Durant and Harden, et cetera. I think the Rockets get the silver medal on the podium stand just because it just seemed like a contentious situation between Paul and management. I hadn't really heard anything about it being anything personal between Paul and Harden, but I just don't think it was working on the court.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw Harden did come out yesterday. Actually, they asked him a question. He's like, yo, there's nothing wrong with Chris Paul. He's like, I love Chris. He was like, we just made a move. He was like this, you know, Chris Paul's a great competitor, a great teammate. He's like, that's all there is. He's like, there's nothing else underneath the scenes
or behind the scenes.
I mean, obviously, you know, we know that they, like you mentioned this earlier, I think today, it wasn't necessarily that they didn't like each other. It was more so just the style of play of the offense just wasn't what Chris Paul wanted to be a part of necessarily.
Right. Whereas, I mean, being a, I could tell there was definitely something between Harden and Dwight Howard when Dwight Howard was out of town. But there doesn't seem to be anything here with that. I just think Houston, but for the sake of the team and keeping your superstar happy, quite frankly, Houston had to make that move. I think, so it's weird because Presti gets the gold medal, but I think OKC gets the bronze just because, oh, man.
You still got to move these contracts.
You still got to move these contracts. And just the, on the one hand, Presti is a really great executive, one of the best guys going today. But on the other hand, man, he had that talent. And sometimes, and there's stuff out of his control. Like, you can't help when guys get hurt. You can't help that Klay Thompson has one of the epic game sixes. I mean, the legend of Klay, game six Klay, started in that OKC Western Conference Finals where he could not miss. But so they got some bad beats on that. You can't help that Dan Gilbert gets really pissed off at LeBron and writes a letter in Comic Sans and then throws his weight around to start penalizing teams with the luxury tax, forcing OKC to essentially have to trade Harden to get him to Houston in the first place because they didn't want to extend Harden. They had to make a choice on their collection of young talent.
And they made the wrong choice.
And they made the wrong choice. But all that being said, so you can't fault Sam Presti for factors out of his control. But at the same time, had three MVPs on that roster at one point, and just I think history will look back at that collection of talent sort of underachieving with one trip to the finals.
One of those, oh, wow, what happened here?
Yeah,
like that's one of the kind of moments. Someone's gonna go back, like you said, and look at those the Thunder buddies and
right
four right. and be like, they only got to the finals once, right? They didn't win anything,
right? And so I think that, so in that sense, I think for historical purposes, OKC probably, because it's never as many draft picks. I mean, sounds like OKC will be drafting the next two drafts. It'll just be OKC picking. But OKC in New Orleans will just be a draft off.
They had 12 picks over the next 5 years, I think it is.
That's insane. But you're never going to hit like you hit with this talent. You can't convince me that you'll get that kind of talent again in subsequent drafts. So for that reason, I think OKC loses, though Sam Presti swung a hell of a deal for the franchise.
Yeah. No, I think that makes perfect sense. I like the scale of giving out a gold, silver, bronze medal. I'm going to copy that. Actually, that might be how we break down trades from here on out.
Yeah. Cause no one loses. Everybody trade. I mean, you get something, right?
Yeah. But, yeah. It's just, I love this system. This is probably the greatest thing you've ever done.
Thank you, man.
So actually, the gold medal, I think, does go to Presti. I would agree with you. He got more assets to the treasure chest. We always talk about this. You know, when you're trying to do a rebuild, you get as many assets as you can. The Danny Ainge, you know, route. Then you try and rebuild. And you still have expiring in Gallinari. You got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, which is the nice young piece to start this rebuild around.
Yep.
And then Adams, I think, is still tradable. A little bit too much money. It's like $25 million a year for Adams, which is a slight overpay to say the least. Schroeder, I think, makes like $16, $17 million a year. Not great at either. But somebody's going to call for these guys. Like, I'm actually surprised that Adams wasn't moved yet. I know we heard a lot of rumblings before the draft. The Celtics were interested. The Celtics, though, I'm sure they just looked at the contract, and they thought, do we really want to lock up $25 million in Steven Adams and have another $25 in Gordon Hayward? Probably not. So I would give him a gold. I would have to give the silver to the Rockets. You think you did, too?
I did. That's okay.
I give them the silver for a different reason, because I think – getting rid of Chris Paul, it's pretty much the same reason. They get rid of Chris Paul, but now your window's a little bit longer. You bring James Harden, a buddy of his, that makes him happier because you don't want him to ever force his way out of Houston. He also just bought minority stakes, I believe, in two teams.
The Dynamo, yeah.
Right.
Soccer team.
Yeah. So he's already investing, which is good. And then you added Westbrook, so it's just solidifying that you're not going to have to worry about losing James Harden, hopefully over the next decade before he retires. So I think they're set up. And then the bronze medal. I don't know who the bronze medal will go to. I guess bronze medal will go to the Morey simply for making a move.
Yeah.
You had to do something. Especially I know he listens to Full Access Hoops. rank him as a loser last week or a couple weeks ago,
right,
for his failure. So he was really eager to get that bronze medal and make a trade. So there you go. Those are my gold, silver, medal.
And one, just again, real quick on your with Morey, a little shine is off, a little polish is off that armor a bit. I think Morey is in a.
Did you, by any chance, not to cut you off, he was on a live pod with Bill Simmons, Ryan Russillo, and I don't know who else, but in Vegas during the summer league. And I heard some pieces of it, but I guess Morey was like really confrontational and like really defensive about like all the rumors and reports that came out about Chris Paul and everything else, and how like he was confident in the team and everything else. And I think this goes into what you're about to say is, I think there are some dinks. The armor, he's like, he's weathered, right? Like,
yes.
There's not as much prestige to the Morey. Like, Morey was seen as this, like, super genius for the trades he's done the last couple of years. Well, yeah. I think that has certainly weathered from probably since the Rockets were eliminated until the Westbrook trade. And even the Westbrook trade, like, it's almost like he just got like a new paint job on his armor, but you're like, yeah, there's still, I still see that little dink there and that little scratch there.
Yeah. I it'll be interesting to see. I think this is a very big test year for him and his new owner. I think they're finally sort of acclimated with each other, right? The honeymoon period's over, the new guy's in, he kept Morey around, he signed that Chris Paul contract, or approved it, for Tita, the new Rockets owner. And clearly regretted it and had buyer's remorse hence Chris Paul is no longer there. So it'll be interesting to see if, you know, 12 months from now or even sooner, if we're talking about Morey going off to the next gig and there's some mutual parting of ways.
And Nick brought up a great point about Morey too, I thought, when we did our emergency pod, and the simple fact that, you know, I mean, if this thing goes bad, it's not like Morey's going to be here to deal with it.
That's a good point. I mean,
he's looking at the next handful of years, and that's it. I mean, he's not thinking what happens when I actually need these draft picks. So the next GM, I think, is in more hot water than Morey, but I think Morey has just simply played his hands for now. He's been all in since he's
got Houston. As we've said countless times on this pod and other platforms, the GM job at the Wizards is open, apparently.
No, it's not.
Oh, what did I miss? I was on vacation.
No, I think that got filled up yesterday, actually. Let me double check. I think we finally got somebody.
Oh, well.
Of course. I mean, dude, the offseason ended. You had to get somebody.
Right.
Okay, so they promoted Tommy Shepard to full-time GM.
Oh, that's okay. So
I know you're
so
a big Tommy Shepard guy.
But, yeah, he was great and above the rim. That's Tom Shepard, right? So he was there, right? Like in the building, they promoted him.
He was the senior vice president of basketball operations for most of last season. He was the general manager on an interim basis for the Wizards after they filed Ernie in April as well.
So what the fuck were they doing all summer? Like, why didn't they just do that in May and get on with it? Like, what?
That's and yikes. With Shepard as the interim GM, this is the guy who drafted Hachimura and the guy who signed Isaiah Thomas and Thomas Bryant free agency. So this is the guy who's been making all the moves.
Oh, this is great. This is just hook it into my veins. Are we covering the Wizards? If not, we need to make sure we feel that. That is just I need Wizards content for this upcoming season. I just want to know what's happening. We can call it capital punishment.
We'll say this though. No stranger to the Wizards. He's been with the franchise for the last 16 seasons.
I don't know if that's good or bad.
I got to say it's not good because there hasn't been much good in the last 16 years.
Right. It's not ideal.
They lost Jordan. They got Tommy Shepard. He's never left.
Man. Gosh.
All right. So final thoughts.
I think we can all, I mean, Summer League's done. I think free agency's done. I thought it was done a week ago and then Westbrook happened, but I'm looking forward to some dog days this summer. Interesting thought. One final thought. I was thinking about this. I was daydreaming as well. Sports in general in America has turned into a two-sport race. We wait for spring football to start and then our sports season goes spring football through NBA free agency, and football gets us to basketball. Basketball gets us to spring football. baseball and hockey aren't really in there for us in America. And I don't remember that being the case when I was younger. And this is more of a social commentary, a pod that we could do, I guess. But I was just interesting to think, like, because I got home and there's no ball on yesterday. So I was watching a lot of first-time flippers on DIY Network and Cold Case Files. But there was baseball on, but I just was like, meh, I'm good. I'm just waiting for spring football to start, and that's like a few weeks away. And then I'll go to the NFL and college football season. And then basketball will be back full swing. And we'll do it all over again. But I really don't – I mean, I check in on the World Series, but I couldn't – I mean, I couldn't name you 10 baseball players, to be honest with you.
Yeah. It's definitely – I mean, I remember growing up, for me, it was baseball. I mean, baseball was definitely my first favorite sport, with basketball always being probably second, now it being first, because I just think it's way more enjoyable. But yeah, we kind of go through this period where it's basketball. We have football to kind of guide us to basketball. Then we have this little period where baseball has almost become just like a social event. Like,
yeah.
I feel like I see people going to a lot more baseball games than ever before, but it's not like people are actually like watching the games. Everyone's just like, all right, let's go get drunk somewhere. Baseball game, pretty good place to go.
A nice Sunday afternoon, you go to a game. I mean, the Mariners have a afternoon first pitch today, and I got shit else to do. I might just go get a ticket and hang out in the bleachers and have some beers.
I mean, my buddies want to go to a game. We were looking at, you know, Yankees Red Sox rivalry, of course.
Sure.
We can get tickets for $40.
Oh, nice.
And they were like, we should go. And I was just like, well, no. I'm also just a dick. I was like, no. I was like, I don't want to go. But they make a good point that, you know, it's $40. You take a train down and just get drunk at the stadium, watch a game. I'm like, sure. I'll just get $40 of alcohol and stay at home. But but this is generally, I will say this, this is generally the time where I do start to care about baseball more. 162 games for a season is way too long. I don't know how any diehard baseball fan can really be that invested for that many games.
Right.
So generally right around now is when I care about baseball. The Yankees are good, which also helps me care about baseball. But then, like, the minute football starts, I know I'm going to stop watching baseball, because then fantasy football and all that fun kicks in, and then we'll head back to having the wonderful NBA season, which I really can't wait for. This upcoming season should be extremely special.
It will be really good. I think imagine just a great NBA season, and from a rating standpoint, LeBron ends up back in the finals. Like, that is Adam Silver's dream, is to just have a great competitive season, and Western Conference Finals is Clippers-Lakers. And then in the East, it's probably Philly, Milwaukee would probably be his ideal scenario.
Yeah.
And then an old school Philly, LA.
Maybe even with LeBron winning MVP, just to be like a little cherry on top.
Oh, yeah. That would, that would be ideal for Adam Silver.
So where can the people find you, Jay?
I am JAYCHRIS 206 on Twitter, JChris 206. You'll find me tweeting nonsense and cyber stalking OJ Simpson. So that's where I am.
You can find me on Twitter at KWallHoops, KWAL Hoops, and on Instagram at KWallHoops. Be sure to follow the brand on Twitter, OTG Basketball. Head to OTGBasketball.com for all the latest and greatest up and coming content around the league. We got a lot of good stuff out right now. Check out the podcast network, Brooklyn Nets, this podcast, Full Access Hoops, the NBA outlet, Just Ball Things. We have a Southwest Division podcast out now as well, with Dalton Pence and Brandon Smart. So shout out to those guys. Be sure to check out that pod as well. And until next time, Jay, it's been a pleasure.
Same, my man.
Peace out, knuckleheads.